This is The Breakfast Show with Priscilla Morning and naturopath Em. And we are talking about sleep today.
We are.
Now, you've just told me during the news and the weather and the traffic that you're going to be using some big words today. So like normal, I've got my pen and I've got my notebook because I'm in class right now.
Alrighty. Okay, so over to me then, I guess.
Yeah, right? this is where you go in.
This is where I come in. Okay, well, I thought it might be a really good place to start is what is sleep? What's actually happening? So this is where the big words come in. So just bear with me. I'm going to get my mouth around them.
I'm excited.
So sleep has obviously deep sleep and the sort of wake arousal state. And that sleep-wake cycle is known as the circadian rhythm. So that might be something that people have heard before. Now, that circadian rhythm, which is like a daily diurnal, is another word that we use, diurnal, which means it's, two stages.
Big words.
Big words, right?
Wow. What was that?
Diurnal.
Diurnal.
Yeah, so you've heard of nocturnal.
Yes.
Yeah, so diurnal is the awake during the day, sleep at night.
Do you know, I've been all through primary school and high school and never known what the opposite of nocturnal was.
There you go. We are diurnal creatures unless you're on night shift.
Like much. For those that do it, we appreciate the
big time appreciate
and the commitment. Yeah. But I like sleeping at night time.
Yeah, same. So the circadian rhythm is established by this little space in our hypothalamus. Right, hypothalamus is a little gland in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this little space or section of the hypothalamus is called, get ready, ready, suprachiasmatic nucleus.
How good is that word? Are you joking?
It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't
it? That's not from Mary Poppins, is it?
Kind of sounds like it, actually. Suprachiasmatic nucleus. Anyway. Moving on.
It's the me. What's that word again, Em? Because that's wow.
Yeah, suprachiasmatic.
Okay, suprachiasmatic.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be sounding so good in our talks today. That's a challenge for you this morning, listeners. Put that in a conversation.
Call up and sing it. I'd
Call
love
us.
To hear.
52413679. Sing it to Em over the phone.
Please, please, please. And I've found, you know what's really interesting is that there's more impulses in the cerebral cortex, which is another part of the brain.
Yeah.
There's more impulses during wakefulness than in sleep in the cerebral cortex. But there has been scans that during, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit simply because I found this fascinating, that there is more activity during oxygen activity during non-REM sleep than during intense physical activity. And like, how cool is that? But we'll come back to that. I just was like, this is so exciting. I have to say it now.
The activity in my brain right now that wants to know more. Okay, we're going to come back to that.
We're going to come back to that.
That's insane though.
Right. I know. Yeah. I'll explain that a little bit more later because that doesn't make sense really in the beginning. But it is our nervous system that transitions us between this sleep-wake cycle, right? So because the hypothalamus is part of that nervous system, part of the... Do you remember where I talked about the... a little bit about the gut-brain axis?
Yeah.
Well, the gut-brain axis is a bit regulated by the hypothalamus. Hypothalamus is an incredible little dude in our brain.
How big would it be?
Maybe like, I can't really make...
Like a palmful?
Smaller. It's a pretty small gland. Yeah. And it regulates so much. Your stress response, your hormones, your thyroid, your digestion, feedback loops back and forth.
So much.
So much. Really big job.
And never gets tired.
Well, no.
See, this is why I'm the student.
He can get worn out. He can get worn out.
And you're the teacher. He
can get tired. Yeah, kind of overworked, I suppose. And then, he's the feedback loops that his communication signals, I guess, because he works in a team with the pituitary glands and, sending hormones back and forth and, messages back and forth to different parts of the body. When he gets overworked, those messages kind of become a little bit dysregulated and the proper signalling doesn't happen.
Listen, she's not even reading notes. This is just her knowledge. She is a wealth of gold. Em, keep on going.
All right. Well, I mentioned before the break non-REM sleep.
Yes.
And so that's one of the kind of categories of sleep, which is sort of like if we use the word categories, you've got REM sleep, which I think everyone is familiar with, and then on-REM, mm-hmm. non-REM sleep. Which REM, for, you know, those listeners at home, please. Rapid eye
or
movement.
Or people in the room that are not you, like me. Break it down for me.
It's not the band. It's a rapid eye movement.
Rapid
just
eye
showing
movement.
My age there.
She's cool. She's
so
very cool.
In non-REM sleep, yeah. There's four stages of that. So you've got your the first stage, which is your sort of transition stage, and that's usually only about 1 to 7 minutes. Typically, you sort of your eyes are closed and you're sort of winding down, you're relaxing, but you could still, like if someone were to wake you during that stage, you'd probably say, I wasn't actually sleeping.
Okay.
And then you hit sort of your first stage of true sleep, and that's where dream fragments might start and your eyes may start to roll side to side, and it's a little bit, you would say if you were woken up, you would be like, oh, I was asleep then. Yeah. Like, but you'd still wake up fairly easily.
Yeah.
The third stage is where you're entering into moderately deep sleep.
Yeah.
And that's when your body temperature might dip just a little bit. Your blood pressure slows a little bit or decreases a little bit. It is harder to wake during that stage. Mm-hmm. And that's usually sort of around 20 minutes after the second stage.
Okay.
So it takes about 20 minutes to sort of get into that stage. And then you hit deep sleep. And this is the deepest level of non-REM sleep. And that's when your body temperature has dropped slightly, your brain metabolism slows, most of your reflexes are still intact. And, you know, this is if you have ever experienced or know someone who sleepwalks, it's in this stage.
Ah, that was my middle sister.
Oh, really?
She was a sleepwalker,
wow,
yeah.
Wow, yeah. Okay, so it's scary. In this stage. Yes, yeah.
Why aren't you
and it's
in
the
bed?
Hardest to wake them during this stage.
And she would get down from a bunk bed. Like she slept on the top.
Wow.
Full sleepwalk down that. She made the descent. No tripping or
that's
anything.
That's incredible, isn't it? And that's like, wild. I guess that's the, you know, because your reflexes are still intact,
yeah.
Even though you're not necessarily consciously, like, well, you're not consciously.
I love this. This is so good, Em.
And all of that, those four stages typically, and I say typically because, you know, obviously there's always, we're individuals, there's variations and there's people that have a lot of trouble with sleep. That typically happens in less than an hour, those four stages.
Okay.
And then, so during a, you know, typical 7 to 8 hour sleep phase,
yeah.
You'll go from that non-REM sleep into REM sleep and then back out again. And so I just quickly ran through the non-REM stages of sleep. And then, as I said, you reach the REM stage and in that, like a typical 7 to 8 hour sleep phase,
yeah.
You sort of come in and out of the REM phase about 3 to 5 times. And each time you're in REM gets a little bit longer.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So by the last time is sort of around, studies show about 90 minutes of REM sleep. And the first sort of stage, of the first time you go into it, it's only about 10 to 20 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. Interestingly, as we age, our REM sleep dips, like the amount of time we spend in REM sleep decreases.
Okay.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
any reason?
Well, I think the sleep is still a fairly, you know, not misunderstood, but it's quite a mysterious.
Oh, I like it. Yes.
Space, mm-hmm. You know, because we can't really say exactly what's going on. We can monitor the brain activity and different areas of the brain, and there's lots of research around different, you know, areas that light up in scans while you're sleeping and things like that. But what is actually occurring, we can kind of, I guess, have an educated guess.
Yeah.
But psychologically, I suppose we can't really
That's true.
Investigate. Wow. Yeah.
And I told you that my one-year-old nephew, he fights sleep time.
Yeah.
I love sleep time, but for him, it's almost like an hour battle between him and his mum, just trying to coax him to sleep.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to miss out. His eyes will be fully closed, but he'll just... But we should tell him, you need the REM sleep, honey.
Because
as you get older, it will get less and less.
Right, totally. And I think, you know, you can kind of see that in throughout the stages of childhood, adolescence, you know. And if I was to make an educated guess, I would say it's got to do with that hypothalamus and the sleep-wake cycle and the stress. Not stress as in, you know, I mean, a one-year-old probably doesn't have stresses like we do, but obviously, but there's a lot of growth that's occurring during those phases.
Okay.
So what sleep actually does is it helps the body repair and it helps the brain develop. And it's called, what we call that is plasticity. Another big word for the day.
I like how you put it, that we're wonderfully made.
We are wonderfully made.
That is a line that I associate with you because you say it so often, I love it. That's amazing.
It's just incredible. Like I've said, you know, the more you dive into how our body works, it's just like, wow.
Mm.
Because while we're sleeping, our brain is actually, synaptic pruning, it's called. It's making new connections and breaking old connections that the brain deems not necessary. So, and this happens the most during young ages, because if you think of how much a baby is learning they're growing, they've got to learn not just, you know, they've got to learn facial recognition of their parents, they're thinking about safety, you know, their own safety, they're learning what hunger feels like, they're learning words, they're learning colours, they're learning sight, sound, taste, all of these different things, as well as the body actually growing at an exponential rate.
Yeah, true. And he's got teeth coming through and that's painful.
Yeah, that's right. So that's another added stress onto that, you know, stress system.
I'm not teething at the age of 44 because that's a little
painful. Oh, it looks painful, doesn't it? It sure does. You think about that in the, like, moving forward into teenage years, that's happening again because the body, that's another period of, you know, intense growth. I mean, you look at a teenager from, you know, you might see them at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, they may have spurted like 5 centimetres year, let alone all of the different synaptic pruning that's been going on in their brains to develop as an adult, you know, into an adult brain, in, you know, all of those lessons that the brain deems really, really important. We need to learn this.
My brain is just blowing up here because you're making me so love this body that I'm in. It's so intricately made.
It is.
With purpose.
It is. And we do love it. We should love it.
We should.
You know, God created it.
Where are we going to next, Em?
So we just talked about, I brought in synaptic pruning and I thought that's a bit technical. What does that actually mean? Like what's happening during synaptic pruning? And I did say this, you know, it's strengthening and breaking connections in the brain, right? But maybe an easier way to think about it is there's a little secretary in your brain that is, okay, at the end of the day, she needs to tidy up her desk. So she's going to keep... While you're sleeping, she's going to keep all of those, she's going to process all of the things that happened in the day. She's going to process situations, experiences, emotions. She will decide, that's not necessary. I'm going to shred that one, break that connection.
So good, Em.
That one is necessary. I'm going to file that away for future reference.
Oh, okay.
That is how we learn and why we have a memory because it's during
insanely
sleep,
amazing.
Right? Wow. I know. What I want to know, and I kind of, I don't know, as a Christian, I feel like, well, this is partly God, like where God comes in is this sort of like, you know, you don't need that.
Come on, Em.
No, you do need that.
Yeah. File that.
File that one.
Shred that.
Exactly. and it also, so that helps, I guess, as a sort of a cascade event, that helps us learn how to regulate our mood. It teaches us how to, you know, focus. It gives us memories of what's important. And that's why we don't have, you know, why we learn from mistakes, why we, you know, are able to continue to achieve things rather than just happening by chance all the time. It's fascinating, really. And, you know, we still don't know exactly how it all works, but... that's what's happening when we sleep. in our brain anyway.
Yeah.
There's lots of other things that are happening while we sleep as well. So as you know, in a nutshell, we're winding down, the body's repairing, and the brain is processing. But the body, what's happening in the body while we're sleeping is we're getting tissue repairs and muscle regeneration and recovery. Our immune it gets strengthened as well. So our immune system sort of gets a bit more like an oomph, I guess, and sort of has time to search the body, I suppose, and
how you put that.
Yeah, because you know how I said cortisol is elevated during the day. So cortisol suppresses your immune system. When it's working well, it doesn't suppress it completely.
Yeah.
It's just keeping it regulated. Right. Okay. But when you're asleep, your immune system has time to go, all right, guys, let's just do a quick scan of the body. What's in here that shouldn't be? Because the cortisol's not. There's less cortisol in the body, so it can kind of ramp, the immune system can ramp up a little bit more, I suppose, and have a bit more of a scan around. It's like the computer, you know, doing a fragment scan or a virus scan.
Oh, yeah, techie.
A virus scan. Look at me knowing stuff. also... Yeah. In the body, what's happening when you're sleeping is your growth hormone is released. Now, growth hormone isn't just about growing. It is associated with insulin.
So this is all ages? This is
all ages.
Wow.
Yeah. More so in ages where there is growth required, obviously. All ages. And that's why, because it's related to insulin sensitivity, that's why you might find people with night shift have problems with insulin regulation if they're long-term night shifters or if they're shift workers, because the shift work where they change different shifts consistently, their body's really struggling to find a routine.
Yeah, and I can testify to that because I used to work in a hospital, not as a nurse, just sterilizing equipment, equipment and the shift work, it does mess up your system. Wow.
Makes
sense.
Yeah, because that's related to your hunger hormones as well. So your leptin and ghrelin. So you may or may not have heard of those, but leptin is your satiety hormone. So I am feeling full or sated. And ghrelin is your hunger hormone.
And it sounds like growling, like a growling
tummy. Yeah, growling tummy. That's right. Do you know what? I'm going to remember that because I always get those two mixed up. As always, in our amazing body, there's lots of different chemicals and pathways that talk to one another to get to the end result. And I'm cutting out all of those middle guys when I talk about these things. So just bear in mind that there is lots of things that happen in between the two points of contact that I'm mentioning. So when that's why you might see or feel when you've had a poor sleep, you might notice that you're actually reaching for high energy foods because your hunger, you feel hungry and you want to put more energy into your body. Typically, you might go for something a little bit more naughty, like what I call part of the sometimes food list.
Yeah.
Sort of like snackies and processed foods.
I'm in total agreement.
High energy. Ah. Yeah. And that then just tips that blood sugar regulation kind of out the window a little bit more, because those sugars don't give us a stable energy throughout don't give us a stable energy throughout the day. Whole foods is what gives us that stable energy throughout the day. And that can kind of then create a bit of a pattern, because you're not getting the good nutrition to build the building blocks for your hormones, for your melatonin and cortisol and everything to help regulate your sleep when you get to the end of the day. And then you can see this pattern forming. That can happen quite regularly for teens, especially when they start to grow a little bit more autonomy on what they're eating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that whole blood sugar kind of picture in a nutshell. And I guess I just wanted to kind of sort of wrap up in remembering that, particularly around young people in that sleep picture. And I talked about that last week as well, like that young people need more sleep.
Yeah.
And 8 to 10 hours is what they kind of recommend for young people, which is very difficult for them to get on a weekday.
It's a lot of hours.
It's a lot of hours, yeah.
I think most of them will be in single digits, way on the smaller end.
Yeah, yeah. And we did talk about sleep hygiene last week as well. So that, I think, you know, kind of just touching base on that again quickly, to help regulate that sleep or bring that sleep back in is, you know, lower lights, mm-hmm. And in the evening, good food throughout the day and good sources of protein, yes. So that we've got those building blocks. A wind down conversation or music rather than kind of high energy activity or screen time, you know, have that,
like that
soft, gentle detachment from the screen up to an hour or more before bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then a good routine as well. So comfortable bed, comfortable, you know, bed sheets,
yes.
And good temperature, all of those sorts of things. And I just want to bring in, because I am a naturopath,
mm-hmm.
and I do love herbal medicine.
Talk to us, Em. Yep.
Herbal teas have a place here.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things to recommend to people as a starting point who are struggling with sleep. It's a very easy and accessible way of bringing into helping that wind down routine as well. Yeah. So
if someone wants to know, hey, Em, what's something I can start with when it comes to herbal teas, what would be your suggestion?
Oh, there's so many beautiful ones, but typical sleep herbs that we would use are things like lavender, chamomile, passion flower.
Ooh, these are all the really nice smelling
teas. Ones. Yeah, lemon balm.
Okay.
Valerian. There's one called Sisyphus, which is
Sisyphus.
Sisyphus jojoba is its Latin binomial, which is, and it's just, it rolls off the tongue really nicely.
You are so smart.
And some of these herbs are, you know, difficult to find, but you might be able to find some of these herbs you can find just in a herbal tea bag in the supermarket in a box of, you know, and
beautiful.
Making that part of your bedtime routine, bringing in your senses with it as well.
And we love our Thursdays with you. What do we have to look forward to next week? Or is it a mystery? Ooh,
I think there might be a bit of a mystery. Ooh, I'm going to just keep you on you.
Leave us hanging.
hanging.
That's Emily Dunn, our in-house naturopath. Thanks for your time. We'll see you next week.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.